Okay, hi everybody. I apologize for the delay. The Mishnah that we're studying, the next line, which we're not going to actually address today, because I want to talk about Slichot, but the Mishnah that we are discussing, the next line that we were scheduled to address, is the statement or the assertion or the advice by the admonition by Hillel HaZaken that b'makom she'ein anashim mishtadel le'otish, if there's a lack of people to stand up and be counted to do the right thing, then try to do it yourself. And so the reason I was late today is because I had the opportunity to sit on a conversion betin in the area, and the truth of the matter is that this is a relatively new thing for me. I've been part of the conversion advocacy world for a long time, but I finally realized or thought that it's time for me to put my money where my mouth was. So I have the privilege of sitting on a betin for conversion, and the proceedings went overtime. And that's why we started late. So that was my pishtadel liyodish. Okay, I wanted to talk about slichot for the simple reason that I think that there are many aspects of slichot that really don't get the kind of attention that they deserve, and I thought I would share with you some insights that have come to me over the past couple of weeks and leading up to Slichot. One of the purposes of Slichot is to intensify the run-up to, or the preparations for, the Yamim Noraim. And given the fact that these are intensive times anyways, I thought it would be appropriate. Okay. Slichot, if you look up in Wikipedia, which is sometimes a decent source, Slichot are often pegged to the period of immediately after the sealing of the Babylonian Talmud. In other words, they say they're late, post-Talmudic, and that the poetry that we recite as part of the Slichot, at least Ashkenazim do, is relatively late. It's after the Bible. It's after the Talmud, and from the 7th century on, we find people saying slichot. I'm not going to talk about what slichot are yet. Okay? However, if you take a much closer look at it, that statement is, what shall we say, misleading. At the center of slichot is an episode in the Torah immediately following the story of the golden calf. Moshe Rabbeinu manages to get the Jews, get the Israelites forgiven by God. And then, as part of this back and forth between him and God, Moshe Rabbeinu says to God, "Hareini na et rachecha." Show me how you relate to the world. Show me how you manifest yourself. So God says, "Listen, no human being can ever comprehend God. However, what I can show you is certain ways in which I relate to people that you can, I don't like this expression, but that's what they say nowadays, right? Wrap your head around." And so he puts Moshe Rabbeinu in a cleft in the rock, and he passes over and reveals himself that he is what are called the 13 attributes of mercy. Yud-Gimel Midot HaRachamim. God is before the person who sinned, and afterwards he's forbearing and abundant in kindness, and so on and so forth. And that's what a person can hang on to. That's what a person can attach themselves to. Adkan. Interestingly, though, if you take a broader view, okay, there was more to that revelation than is explicitly stated in the Bible there in the book of Shemot. Because later on, in the book of Midbar, after the Israelites have messed up and screamed and yelled and bemoaned or accepted the testimony of the spies, and they say, "Oh, this is terrible, this is horrible," and God has had it with them. And he says, "You know what? I'll make you a great nation, Moses. That way, I'll keep my promise to Abraham. But I can't take it with these people." And Moshe Rabbeinu turns to God and says, "You're the one who told me that you, meaning God, relate to the world through mercy, that you're compassionate, that you're long forbearing, and that you're abundant in kindness. That's what you told me. That's what you said. That's how you relate to the world. And that's how you will relate to the Israelites. What happened to that?" And God forgives the people. In other words, what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing is saying, here is something which I have, you know, here is something you told me that this is who you are, and I'm reminding you, and I'm asking you to please relate to us this way." In other words, he turned an act of revelation into a prayer. This reference, or this invocation of the Yud Gimel Midot, of these 13 attributes of mercy, pops up consistently through the Tanakh. For example, the book of Yoel, the prophet Joel, also screaming and yelling and carrying on about how horrible the Jews are, and then he says, "And God is Erech HaPaim Rav Chesed Ve'Emet." Now he directly refers to the fact that God relates to the world through mercy, so that if the Jews would only do tshuva, then they will be able to be forgiven. But again, this is a hook. The Yud Gimel Midot that God revealed to Moses becomes a hook. It becomes a way of bridging the gap of finding a way back to God. Same thing with Jonah. When we read Jonah, it's the book of Jonah at the end of Yom Kippur. Same deal. And this has got nothing to do with Jews. This has got to do with Assyrians, who are really not good people generally. What is Jonah say? Jonah says to God, he says, "You know, I ran away because I knew that you're a forgiving God. And I was going to look like an idiot because I'm going to sit there and say Nineveh's going to be destroyed, and you're going to forgive them. Why? Because you are Kel Erech HaPaim Rav Chesed Ve'Emet, because you are a God of compassion and long forbearing and so on and so forth." Again, the same refrain. In other words, the revelation of the 13 Midot HaRachamim to Moses was not just intended to give Moses an insight as to how God rules the world, but rather it was intended as a way of providing Jews with an angle to beg for forgiveness and to remind God that this is how you promised to deal with us, and if we commit ourselves to change our ways, if we commit ourselves to do tshuva. That's the reason why I said this is thing much more, that Slichot are much more ancient than the 7th century. The center of Slichot, with all of the poems and all of the verses and everything else, the center of Slichot is the recitation of the 13 Midot HaRachamim. And the rabbis already in the Talmud say that they sort of anachronistically saw guys say that when God revealed the 13 attributes of mercy to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's as if God became a chazan, he became a shlich tzibur, and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Whenever you get coming to shul and you recite these in front of me, I will remember and I will forgive them." And that's the root of Slichot. So the root of Slichot is not a 7th century, you know, early medieval, late antiquity type of thing. It's rooted in a conception which goes back to the Bible and which finds explicit expression already in the Talmud. So this is a very, very ancient idea by us reciting and reminding God, "Please deal with us the way that you promised," that we will be able to have an opening to be able to be forgiven. It reminds me, actually, there is a very old movie. It's got to be from the 30s, I think. 1930s. Oh, we haven't gotten to the 2030s yet. Okay. There's a very old movie called Elizabeth in Essex. It stars Bette Davis and I think Errol Flynn. I didn't have a chance to double check if it was Errol Flynn or Tyrone Power, one of the two. One of the, this kind of, you know, kind of person. And Bette Davis plays Queen Elizabeth I, and let's assume it's Errol Flynn plays the Duke of Essex. Duke of Essex was the last of Elizabeth's great favorites, and in the end he rebels against her, and he's sentenced to death for treason. Now, and earlier in the movie, Elizabeth gives him a ring and says, take this ring. Whenever I am angry, no matter how angry I am at you, send me the ring, I'll forgive you, I promise. And as, so that's there. And then at the towards the end of the movie, as they were taking Essex out to be executed, she sits there, and Bette Davis, as Queen Elizabeth, goes on and on, please send me the ring. As they brought the, as he sent me the ring, he sent me the ring, because she wants to forgive him. He is an arrogant so-and-so, and so he just, you know, says, I'm never going to give him, I'd rather die than...